broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Lots of news to get to tonight in our News and Information Hour. Mel Gibson and his former girlfriend have reached a custody agreement. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to air with suicide prevention announcements and other things. On the line is Little Ian. We have with us Little Ian Anderson, who's a resident now of Atlanta. Right, Ian?
Right.
You moved to Atlanta?
Right, yeah.
When?
Well, I moved probably about 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Now, were you talking to Dan?
Yeah, I was talking to Dan. And because I heard what you said, you know, about the Shire, and Andy Richter said he would kill himself if he lived in the Shire, and I called up, I want to talk to Dan, and he said to talk to you.
And what were you and Dan talking about?
Well, I told him mostly, I said that you're not going to hobbit, that living in the Shire is not going to kill himself, because they're
happy, right?
Right, they're happy. And they're not going to kill themselves. You're not going to kill yourself if you live in the Shire. You're not going to kill yourself. If you live in the Shire, you're not going to kill yourself, even if you're not a hobbit.
Well, what if you're a human? If you're Andy Richter and you're in the Shire, you don't want to kill yourself?
No, you're not going to kill yourself, because everyone's happy in the Shire, right? And everyone's, like happy, and everyone has a job, and everyone has, a place, right? They all have their place in the Shire, right?
Okay, so if Andy lived there, he wouldn't want to kill himself.
No, he's not going to kill himself. And besides, Dan was saying to me, I was saying that they're in the Shire, when they go to a tavern, they don't have ale, like a hobbit ale, you know.
They have what?
They have like a hobbit ale, you know. They have like a mead.
Hobbit ale.
Right.
So they drink.
Right, they drink, like in a movie, you saw them drinking.
That's right, they did drink.
It's like a hobbit ale or like a mead, you know.
And well, now, how do you know it's hobbit? I guess the hobbits make everything themselves. So is it powerful?
Oh, right, it's probably powerful, right. It's probably knock you right on your back, you know. I bet you'd probably take a human, like Andy Richter. And, of course, it's all made up, you know. It's all made up. I don't really believe that there's hobbits, you know.
No, I know you don't believe there's hobbits, but we're theorizing here that, you know, everyone's happy in the Shire. Even if you're a human being, you're happy in the Shire, and they have hobbit ale.
Right. Well, so what I would think would be hobbit ale. That's what I said to Dan. I said, it's probably hobbit ale. He says, well, why you say that? I said, because they make everything themselves, you know. The hobbits make everything themselves. You're importing or buying, you know, from China, you know, someplace like that, you know.
Yeah, you're not importing it from Mordor or
right.
You're not buying. Well, I guess they buy it stuff off the dwarves.
Right, you know, it sounds like we talk about this, but I'm not trying to say that I believe that these people exist, right?
Okay.
But if you were talking about whether you're happy in the Shire. It's mostly probably you do. You drink a hobbit ale. And plus they smoke probably some kind of a hobbit weed or hobbit smoke.
You know? Hobbit weed?
Right. Like
marijuana?
It's not like marijuana. It's not. They're not going to have the same kind of vegetation. It's probably not like marijuana, no. But,
Well, what, so is it cannabis?
Well, I don't think so. It's probably like some other sort of dope, you know, hobbit smoke, you know.
Hobbit weed.
Or hobbit dope, you know, hobbit smoke, or hobbit wanna, you know. Like they call it marijuana, you got the hobbit wanna.
Hobbit wanna. Well, why do you think that what they're smoking there, and the only guy that I know that Bilbo.
Right, Bilbo Baggins, he's probably got, you know, rat ass on that, you know. So Bilbo Baggins probably look, I stayed at him, he's probably like rat ass, right? You know, he's probably got rat ass. On a hobbit ale and smoking a hobbit wanna or hobbit dope, right?
He's getting his rat ass?
Right, he's probably got rat ass, right? You know, and they have to carry him home, right, to his tree stump, right? And because all the hobbits, you know, they live in a tree, right? And so if you got angry, You set fire to the trees. You burn all the hobbits out.
Okay, you're getting a little weird on me now, man.
That's only if you got really, really angry at the hobbits, you know. But that's what I would do. If I got really angry at the hobbits, you know, I'd go and set fire to the trees, and set fire to all their homes, and burn the hobbits out. They'd be trapped inside a... They'd be trapped inside a tree stump. You hear the hobbits screaming, right?
Okay, get him out of here, will you?
I didn't do anything.
God, is he weird.
What'd he do?
Oh, he's talking about burning the hobbits out of their tree stumps. Screaming and hobbit wanna. Do they get high? They're smoking hobbit dope.
Yeah, that's, he was telling me about that. It said Dan told him too.
Yeah, but I didn't know. Was he talking to Dan about burning the hobbits out of their tree stumps? Because he was sitting there all laughing like it's cool.
Man, he must be losing his mind.
Losing his mind? That guy's never been right, ever. I'll tell you one thing. He's in Atlanta now? When did he move down there?
About a year ago, because his sister's down there.
His sister's down there? Somebody ought to tell the cops in Atlanta that Little Ian's in town, man. And,
If you're a hobbit, man, you better fireproof your stump.
If you're a hobbit, fireproof your stump?
Yeah.
You know, you're right, man. If any of you hobbits living down in Atlanta, man, and you're living inside the stump of a tree, fireproof it. Oh, my God. Mel Gibson and his former girlfriend reached custody accord. After more than a year in court, Mel Gibson and his ex-girlfriend, Oksana Grigoryeva, ended a custody battle over their two-year-old child, Lucia, with an omnibus settlement, much of which was described by a Los Angeles County Superior Court judge at a hearing on Wednesday. Included in the financial terms of the agreement would be that Mr. Gibson would permit Ms. Grigoryeva and her daughter to live rent-free in a home that would ultimately be sold with the proceeds placed in a trust for Lucia's benefit at the age of 18. Under the agreement, Lucia, who will be represented by a minor's attorney, will share... I didn't know they had minor's attorneys. They've got attorneys that...
Well, yeah, they got to have somebody's going to represent a little kid. It's hired, you know, probably by the court, you know.
Hired by the court. I guess the anyone representing a minor would stand to be paid in terms of contingency. I don't know. Nonetheless, under the agreement, this child is represented by a minor's attorney, will share equally with Mr. Gibson's other children in his estate, but she must waive any interest in a family trust that he previously established with his former wife, Robin. In effect, Mr. Gibson could thus disperse his fortune through the trust without leaving substantial assets in an estate that would be shared with this baby, Lucia. Wouldn't you, you know, that's wouldn't you feel a little dirty?
What do you mean?
Well, he's leaving his estate. And I understand the law. I'm not quibbling. I'm just, a father's love. You have a daughter, and here's this child that they're going to establish a new trust. So I guess in a way, he's saying, okay, here's Lucia, and we're going to start the trust now for her. We're going to sell the house. The proceeds go into this trust for her benefit. She's a two-year-old, which means 16 years will elapse between now and the time that child is of age. Mel Gibson is not going to be a just dormant artist. Mel Gibson's going to continue to earn, even if it's royalties. But I don't know what happens to those royalties if that child is entitled to any of them. I don't know. I'm one of these guys. You know what my problem is? I'll tell you what my problem is. I'm the guy, and this has been a problem. This doesn't make me a great guy. This makes me a jackass, and I've done this my whole life. I'm the guy who says, what's best for everybody? I'm always that guy, you know?
You probably wind up getting screwed, too.
There, you hit the nail on the head. You hit the nail right on the head. I'm always the guy that says, you know, whatever's cool is cool, baby. What do you need, huh? What do you need? Daddy's home, huh? Well, you know, it'd be easier if we... All right, let's go ahead and do that. And do you think anybody... And I'm not complaining. This is a lesson in life. That's all. It's just a lesson in life. Understand something, folks. And some of you figured this out. It is human nature. It's not evil. It's not bad. It's just human nature to grab, 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 grab. So when you decide you want to compromise, you say, well, let's make it easy. No one's going to be giving you any brownie points. Please don't think that everyone's going to turn and say, oh, my God, what a marvelous person you are that you just done what you done, you know.
Why'd you do it?
Why did I do it? I did it. Well, probably originally in my life I did it to get praise and to get somebody to love me or to get somebody to recognize me. I do it now in my life just so we won't have a damn fight, you know. Just so that I can cut through the horse dung and get something finished so that we're not involved in a protracted dispute. Now, this cat here, this Gibson, he's got a separate thing for her. If I'm the mother, and that would be very, very strange if I was the mother.
Yeah, but think of how cool it would be. You get a lot of money, too.
I wouldn't be getting that much money. If I was going to be a mother, I'd rather be... What are we talking about anyway? Anyway, so I would say, don't you think this daughter of yours is entitled to the mass of your trust, to which he would holler into the phone, you lousy, stinking Jew bitch, and then I'd hang up. Ms. Grigory was also scheduled to receive three separate payments totaling $750,000, but she could lose some of that, or Mr. Gibson could face further penalties. If either violates an agreement not to discuss their relationship in public, the two are also specifically barred from writing or contributing to books or articles about each other, the judge said. I love this. Gibson's also expected to bear the brunt of the lawyer's fees that will reach into the millions of dollars and will provide a substantial monthly allowance for Lucia's support, according to a person who was briefed on the settlement but spoke in condition of anonymity, even though they shouldn't have, but they did, because people just can't keep their big fat mouths shut because of the sensitivity about privacy in custody cases. So you don't want to say what your name is because of the sensitivity in custody cases or because of the sensitivity in your life. As the custody battle unfolded, Mr. Gibson's latest film, The Beaver.
You're kidding.
No, that's the name of it. Mr. Gibson's latest film, The Beaver, sank almost without a trace.
Yeah, that's dirty.
No, it ain't dirty. I don't think. Anyway, Mr. Gibson's latest film, I bet you he tanked The Beaver just, you know.
Is it about Leave It to Beaver?
Is it about Leave It to Beaver?
Yeah, I mean, it's about not leaving anything to the beaver, but the beaver himself.
You mean after the beaver's parents died?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think Mel Gibson would invest millions to do a movie about what happened to the beaver? You got to be putting me on.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of not enough good material. A friend of mine saying the writers, man, they need good writers.
Yeah, I'll say they need good writers if Mel Gibson's doing a movie called The Beaver. Anyway, as the custody battle unfolded, Mr. Gibson's latest film, The Beaver, sank almost without a trace as it took in less than $1 million at the domestic box office after its summer release by Summit Entertainment in May. Good God Almighty, Gibson, are you telling me the guy that made Braveheart, the guy that made The Passions of the Christ, the guy that made all those, Lethal Weapon movies, are you telling me that all of a sudden you forgot how to make a movie? You make a movie called The Beaver and it sank for less than $1 million? Why don't you get your head out of your ass and get back to making all those cool movies? You know what your problem is, Gibson? And I'll tell you right now what his problem is. Oh, well, you made The Passions of the Christ, so I guess you're an artist now. Is that it? Are you, who's the guy? What's that guy's name?
Which one?
That Italian. What's his name?
Fellini.
Fellini, yeah. I bet you Gibson thinks he's the American Fellini. Is that what you think? Well, you made yourself and that other piece of crap, that Apocalyptico or whatever the hell that thing was called, that sucked too. Get back to making movies like you know how to make them. Your little girl benefits from it. Don't tell me you're tanking movies on account of you got to pay this kid. That can't possibly be the case. Nobody's going to go see a movie called The Beaver, man, unless it's about, well...
Or
the beaver. All right, we'll be back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to air suicide prevention announcements, and a couple of them will be in the new Mel Gibson movie,
The Beaver.
All right, we'll be right back, Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and News Talk and Entertainment Show that knows what it's talking about. 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Well, I was just looking at a C-SPAN schedule. There are a number of events that are going to be happening on September the 11th. It's the 10th anniversary, and it is a significant day. I'm not going to give a big speech about it. You know, if it means something to you, it should mean something to every American, and I'm sure that it does. What we're going to do in this show is not really much of anything. By that, I mean we're going to we'll do the show as we usually do the show, mindful of the significance of the day. We have usually when we start our show, or at least when we start 9/11, we play a montage of the unbelievably horrifying sounds that we heard that day, accompanied with the visuals, but this being radio. And we've done that every year since 2002. And we will do it again this year at midnight on September the 11th. That montage of horrifying, horrifying things that we lived through. And I think it's important, you know, I mean, yeah, I just do.
Why do you want to do that?
Because I think it's important to remember it. And we have an opportunity now like we've never had before. We document everything these days so fully. We document not just the events of the big historic events that affect the world, the big historic events that are in international and national news. We document our own lives. We document our street, our neighborhood, our jobs. You know, never has history been so thoroughly recorded. And I don't even know at times whether we're aware of what it is we're doing. So when this thing happened, it was absolutely upside down, one side, the other. I mean, we looked at it from every angle, and we've got it. And we've never had the opportunity to relive history the way we do today. We can get into a time machine anytime we want. You know, I told you, I've got that 100 years of New York Times front pages. And I can lose myself by putting that CD-ROM in and literally take a trip back in time. I become a man reading a newspaper in the year 1914. I'm looking at what the concerns were of the day. I'm looking at the international news. I'm looking at the local New York news. And you want to know something? It's all surprisingly similar to today. There's not a whole lot different, folks. There just isn't. Strikes, racism, police raids, murders, fires, the tragedy of losing a child, the tragedy of missing children, missing wives, missing people. It's all there. 100 years ago, today, no different. War. And the fear that comes with that. Budgets. How much is it going to cost today? How much was it costing yesterday? What are we going to do about how much this is costing and that is costing? You think that this is the only Congress and the only president and the only generations ever worried about that? You think this is the only time we've ever argued about health care? You know, people have talked about this during the debate over health care. You know, this is not the first time that we've been talking about it. They've been talking about it a lot longer than Harry Truman. You can go back 100 years and look at a newspaper, they're talking about it. Murder. Rape. Oh, yeah. Horrifying crimes. Horrifying crimes. No, people. You know, I know I've had my disagreement with Dr. Stone. I say, well, Dr. Stone, maybe we have more serial murderers because we just have a higher population of people. And he says, no. I think there's something else going on. Well, there may be something else going on from this respect, that there's kind of what do they call that? An exponential increasing of a phenomenon based upon the rapidity of information. But people are people, and they don't change, and they act the same. Societies get better. That's the good news. People are equal, and people, you know, we all handle ourselves better, and we react better, and we contribute better to the society around us, and we raise our children better. But the challenges are the same, man. And that's the beauty of my little 100 years of the New York Times front pages. I can go back. I can time travel. I can go anywhere back to 1851 and see the same stuff that we're dealing with today. The same worries, the same crimes, and people with the same hopes.
People wearing the same clothes.
People wearing the same clothes. Well, not exactly.
The bowler hat?
Although I do want to get a bowler hat. If you want to give me something for my birthday and there's still time, get me a bowler hat, will you? One of those Laurel and Hardy hats?
You got it.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Join us at philhendryshow.com to watch live streaming video of our show every night, live streaming audio of the show available there, obviously, on the videos. You can also access our affiliate list. We have 130 radio stations for you to choose from across the country. They're always coming. They're always going. They're always going. They're always coming, if you'll pardon the expression. And they're a great, great list, a great group. And we consider them to be very courageous broadcasters.
Why are they courageous?
Well, why are they courageous? To let you on the air every night.
That takes courage.
All right. Professor Emery Clayton is joining us from L.A. Canyon College, I believe. And we're going to talk a little bit, Professor, about this story.
I think this is in...
Was this in California?
That is my understanding, yes.
All right. Now, this is the story of a 35-year-old... father, an Irvine man, Irvine, California. Why does it say KPSP? What is that?
I have no idea.
No, I'm sorry. I'm asking my...
I think I got it from, like, a TV station in Nebraska.
Why would you get that story from a TV station in Nebraska? Never mind. 35-year-old Irvine man accused of throwing his 7-year-old son off a sightseeing boat in Newport Harbor defended himself Wednesday in a round of television interviews, saying he and his son were just, quote, screwing around. Honestly, what it was just boys roughhousing and then screwing around and then jumping off the edge of the boat. We were just screwing around, just showing off, just being guys. It's not like I threw him off. We went together. It was just like a hand-in-hand thing. Bryles denied reports that he angrily threw the child overboard because he would not stop crying. There was no hitting. There was no striking of any kind, no anger whatsoever. I put him over the edge, and then he jumped, and I went in right after him. I don't know where the anger came from because we were having a pretty good harbor cruise. The Orange County Sheriff's spokesman, John Amermino, said witnesses had an entirely different account of what happened. According to several witnesses, the boy was crying. He told him to stop crying, and he repeatedly slapped him in the face with an open hand. Others aboard the boat were so offended they began advancing toward Bryles to stop him. If you don't stop crying, I'll throw you overboard, Amermino said, Bryles told his son. Amermino questioned why Bryles struggled with sheriff's deputies if he was only engaging in horseplay with his son. Why did he become combative toward deputies? He was obnoxious. He was intoxicated. People on the boat said that he had been a problem. I'm trying to see here. Is this the same? This is this TI guy. Professor Emery Clayton joins us from L.A. Canyon College in northern L.A. County. Professor, how are you?
Well, I'm doing very well, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you about this. It's a story that I think has garnered some attention that is not exactly the kind of attention that one would want. I don't think that people are accurately seeing this story.
And what are people getting wrong?
Well, what people are getting wrong is the fact that this was a man dealing with a crying child. Let's forget for the moment that this man's story is they were engaged in horseplay. I don't doubt that the man, once he was confronted by the police officers, was worried that his story, that his reasons for doing what he did would not be seen with sympathy. And so he concocted perhaps a story that he felt might be more readily believed. But I believe that this man was acting in a manner that one would describe as defensive.
But defensive what? Toward the police?
Toward the police, yes, because if you have a young man of 7 and this child is crying, now we live in a day and age now where people feel it is their God-given right to present themselves, to insert themselves into the arguments, the discord, or otherwise the discussions of other families. In other words, we live in a day and age of the busybody. Now, here's a man who's trying to talk to his child. The child is crying. The child is acting up. The child is screaming. The child, in other words, is presenting a problem to the father who is trying to calm this child down. Now you have people on this boat who are advancing toward this man, telling this man, you may not speak to the child thus and so. And
people say that this man was slapping the child in the face.
People say a lot of things. I don't know if it's true or not, but what I do know is that the man panicked, recognized there was only one thing he could do in order to discipline this child and keep these people out of his face, and that was to pick this child up and throw this child into the Newport Harbor, which is exactly what he did. Now, he jumped in after the boy, and I believe he did that because he felt poorly that the child would be in the water by himself, and he wanted to jump in and continue his discussion, or if you will, his discipline of his child. But he wanted to get away from all of these people who were suddenly pressing forward and felt empowered to tell him what to do, how to live, and what time it is out on the street. Well, I can tell you something right now. Had I been that man, I would have done exactly the same thing. And
all right, Professor Clayton, I got to interrupt you. You're saying that this father, in attempting to discipline this child, was now being set upon by people on the boat who would not allow him to discipline the child in the manner that he wanted to discipline the child. And so he was, by throwing this kid in, he was attempting to get away from those people.
Yes, he was trying to get some privacy so he could continue his discipline of this child. Now, where are you going to get privacy on a harbor cruise in Newport? We're not going to get any privacy anywhere. There's no place. It's a public craft. It's a sightseeing ship. There are people everywhere. And where there are people everywhere on this particular boat, this man was going to be encountering more of these, if you want to call them, Budinskis, people busybodies, looky-loo, rubberneckers. You know the type. You see them every morning on the freeway. You see them every night when you come home on the freeway, and you see them every day in the supermarket when you're trying to tell a recalcitrant child to shut its mouth, that you're trying to get something done, and here comes some rubbernecker. Going to look around the corner with that big, long rubber neck of his and, I didn't mean to butt in, but let me just tell you how to raise your child. I mean, these rubberneckers, you've got a body, the man is standing in one aisle, and his neck is stretched all the way around two aisles down with his head sitting there to look at you.
Yeah, that's very funny.
Well, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm telling you that...
Yeah, the guy's body is two aisles down and the neck stretched down.
I'm saying that that's what... In reality, in the mindset, that's what they're doing, if not in reality. And they're doing it so effectively that you're almost delusional. You almost see the neck and the head come floating down the aisle. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't understand what you're saying, and it doesn't make any difference.
I'm saying that it is, these people are so good, Phil, at butting in.
No, I know. They're so good at butting in that you imagine seeing their neck stretching two aisles down and their head sitting there telling you what to do.
But you're not just imagining it. What I'm saying is you are delusional. In much the same manner that a child that has anorexia, a little girl that has anorexia, she is so delusional that she actually sees herself getting fatter after she eats something like an olive, you know.
Well, perhaps I haven't studied the phenomenon to that degree. What I'm saying, though, is, and what I'm asking you, is the problem as you see it is that there was nowhere for this man to privately discipline his child.
That is exactly what I'm telling you, and I'm telling you that as a result of that, turn here. I'm coming home with my wife. We were at a function this evening. Professor Galuli is retiring after some 27 years. He had been chairing the philosophy department. And we'd had a dinner with him.
Oh, okay. Was it pleasant?
It was very much. It was a wonderful time. As you know, Phil, I'm a African-American as is my wife. And I enjoy myself with my colleagues, even though a great many of them are white people, and I like white people. I don't have any racial animosity, but I'm more comfortable with my own people. But this was very pleasant to be around that many whites and laugh as hard as I did. It was quite pleasant.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
And I'm not being sarcastic.
No, I know that you're not.
You sound sarcastic.
I'm not being sarcastic either. I'm not. I'm just trying to avoid the topic altogether.
Avoid the topic of what? That I had a...
Let's just keep it on the subject here of this father. Now, the guy throws his...
Dog?
No, his kid. I thought it was his daughter. His son.
Yes, he threw his son into the Newport Harbor. And this was his way of saying, by God, I'll get some privacy even if I have to watch this. And he throws the kid in and he jumps in himself. Now he can swim over to the child and continue discipline this child. But what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. The Orange County Sheriff's Department, with their little harbor patrol, the little man there's got a boat and the little blue light, and it goes, wee, wee, and he gets to blow a horn. Now, those guys, I'll tell you, they really get to me. And
what are you talking about now?
I beg your pardon?
What are you talking about now?
I'm talking about the harbor. Have you seen the Orange County Harbor Patrol?
Yes.
They've got their little tugboat that goes around and around.
No, that's not a tugboat. That's a patrol boat. Why do you feel the need to mock them?
Well, because every time you turn around down in Newport Beach, there's a cop. I've got nothing against the police. I think the police are necessary. But my God, you can't even swim in the harbor there without seeing their little Orange County tugboat service with the little... Oh, boy. So anyway...
Boy, you know, it's one thing to make a point. It's another thing to just to gratuitously insult the police. These guys are there just doing a job. There were people on that ship, that cruise ship, that saw something.
Yeah, they saw something. They saw something they didn't like, and that was a man disciplining a loudmouth, screaming, screeching, 7-year-old kid. Screeching and screaming and yelling and hollering and bellowing like a stuck cow. And they finally said, I can't take it any longer, and he's telling the kid to be quiet. Now, here's what I'm saying.
How do you know? Everything that you're describing to me sounds like you have a little bit of an issue with the kid. And
why would I have an issue with his kid?
Well, with any kid, because you're saying screeching and screaming. Have you got kids?
Phil, don't try to psychoanalyze me.
I'm not trying to psychoanalyze you, but what I'm hearing you say is it sounds to me like you sympathize somehow with a man who has to deal with a loud, quote, screeching, screaming kid, as you put it. So there he is with this kid. He's dealing with the kid. The people are coming up and they're butting in.
Yes, the people are coming up and butting in and saying, hey, yo, and this kind of nonsense. And if I were him, I would have done exactly the same thing. I would have said to them, look what you're about to make me do. This is your fault, not mine. And I'd pick the kid up over my head. And I want to be very, very clear. I would have that child over my head, and I would throw the child in much the same manner that Frankenstein threw Igor off the top of that windmill so many, many years ago in the classic James Whale film. Now,
So you'd pick a kid up over your head and chuck that kid into the water?
Yes, but then I'd jump in, too.
Don't you think you'd scare that child?
That child scared me. The child scared me by not paying heed to what it was I was trying to tell him, and then the child further scared me through his behavior that influenced these adults to come over to me and menace me. These adults would menace me as they menaced this man, standing there, taunting, punching their fists into their open hands, wrapping things around their fists as if to muffle the sound of a fist against bone, picking up instruments, sticks, rods, anything they can find, slamming them into the open palms of the other hand. You know what I'm talking about. And here's this man looking at a mob that could very well be out of control. And so he picked this child up, chucked the kid as far as he could out and away from the ship, and dove in after him to get away from a mob of maniacs. And I don't see anything wrong with that, Phil. And I think the police should reconsider the very harsh treatment they've given this man because, again, we're living in a time, Phil, where things get very, very confused.
Well, there's nothing confusing about what these people said they saw. These were witnesses now. They saw a man slap a child. They heard this man yelling at this child. This guy resisted arrest, according to the police officer, the spokesman for the Orange County Sheriff. This man resisted the sheriff's deputies that came to investigate. So I think there's an awful lot here that needs to be sorted out. And you know, my hat's off to the people on that boat that did say something. You know, I read a story about this guy, Alan Blackthorne. I've seen a lot on TV about this scumbag, and I also read the book about him. Ann Rule wrote a fantastic book about this guy, Alan Blackthorne. He's a real piece of garbage, a psychopath, who was married to a woman for a number of years. Eventually, she was able to get away from him, and she got custody of the two children that they had together. She moved as far away from him as she could. She moved to Tampa, Florida. But it wasn't good enough for a controlling psychopath like Alan Blackthorne. And this scumbag eventually hired some people to go and kill her. And kill her they did. But the good news, the happy ending to this, is that Alan Blackthorne wasn't able to lie his way out of this. He's in prison for life. And hopefully he will rot there, when it comes time to rot. Now, one thing this guy did, and we're talking about people that have got a problem with impulse control. In the book, Ann Rule describes another marriage that Mr. Blackthorne had before this unfortunate woman who was murdered by him. And the woman describes an event on a freeway in Oregon where they were driving, and alongside Mr. Blackthorne's car came a motorcycle, a Harley-Davidson, with two people riding on it. And something snapped inside this guy, Blackthorne. He couldn't take the sight of the motorcycle, maybe. He didn't like the look of the people that were on it. He didn't like the idea of motorcycles. Whatever it was, he got in behind these people. He floored it right into the bike, causing this thing to spin out of control and killing, I think, both people, or at least one of them, on the motorcycle. And one of the people bounced off the hood of his car and over the top, as you can well imagine. She watched this happen. She witnessed this happen, and he told her, whatever happens, you will say that these people ran into me. In other words, he already was going to, and he threatened her with, the ultimate if she did not go along with this. Now, what struck me about that was the impulse control that some people have, that they just go out and they do something horrific, and then they cover it up later. And a guy like this, it's a simple thing, just throwing a kid off a boat. You know, that kid could have gotten very seriously hurt. You hit water, and you're going at any kind of speed, it's like cement. So, let that be a lesson.
You want to keep Dr. Clayton?
Get rid of Dr. Clayton. All right, we're going to come back here on the world-famous... Don't tell him I said that, though. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with a little more. We're going to wrap up. Al Sharpton, GOP candidates are like the pre-1960s racist segregationists. Really? We'll be back with that on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Representative Michelle Bachmann says it's absurd and ridiculous to think her comment regarding God using the hurricane to get the nation's attention was anything other than humor. Well, it's difficult for us to say that that's humor, Ms. Bachmann, when you're constantly talking about how much you love God and Jesus. So now you're joking? When you're talking about God, and you're talking about how important God is, and important Jesus is, and important your faith is, and important this, that, and now all of a sudden you're joking, it's a little difficult. You're not known for your sense of humor. Now, she says she's got a great sense of humor. Oh! Let me tell you something. I got a great sense of humor, and I ain't never heard you say one funny thing, Mrs. Bachmann. Not one funny thing other than when you talk about Marcus being your husband. I have to chuckle.
What's chuckle?
That's halfway between chuckling and heckling. Anyway, how's that for a save, man? Here is Michelle Bachmann as she talks about, the God hurricane joke thing.
hours, it would be absurd and ridiculous to think that that was the intention of my comment. If you know me, you know that
we don't know you.
Loves humor.
We don't know you.
Great sense of humor. And I think it's important to exhibit that humor sometimes when you're talking to people as well. And if you take everything that a person says that's straightforward,
is that right?
You misunderstand the intent.
Exactly. Well, one thing you're known for, though, is you make things up. You've been caught more times than not making things up out of whole cloth. Do I like her? No, I don't like her. If you're a conservative, you shouldn't like her. If you're a Republican, you shouldn't like Michelle Bachmann. If you've got any hope at all of having the White House in 2012 as a Republican, you should fear this woman becoming your nominee. Honest to God, she's stupid. She may be a conservative, but she's stupid, and she's not even honest. And another thing.
Show's over.
Oh, the show's over. World-famous Phil Henry Show is, it's produced by Dan Northcraft. It's produced by Chris Johnson, John Wyrick, Fred Scotty, and me, Phil Henry. Join us online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com, where you can get a backstage pass, and you can watch and love and enjoy all of the marvelous things we have there for you. Don't forget our ball caps coming into our merchandise store. We'll be at the NAB very, very soon in Chicago filing reports. Until then, adios.
Phil Henry.